You're listening to Around Comics, episode 246, brought to you by InStockTrades.com, Cadence Comic Art, and Netflix. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please drop by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. Let's get you introduced to this week's panel. First of all, guest for the Windy City Comic Con, longtime listener of the show, usually in the peanut gallery, but he's graduated to the big table this week. Mr. Kyle Bice, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Right. Table of assholes.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Welcome.
Yep. You're one of the resident assholes of the room.
Mic'd up assholes.
All right.
Mr. Tom Caters.
Hello.
Good to have you back. 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, it's good.
You said you had about 2 months worth of comics to talk about.
Yeah, I do.
So I see that gargantuan pile of comics that you are ready to palaver about.
Heaving. I had to rent a car to bring over the comics I wanted to talk about.
I know some old comics in there too.
I put those away. I'm saving them for another time.
Another time?
Justice League International.
Yes.
And I had a Flash issue mixed in there, too.
I saw that Flash issue.
I always
issue.
Carry old comics with me everywhere I go.
You bring tears to my eyes because I remember buying that Flash issue as a young 7-year-old child.
In 1952.
Yes, indeed. Exactly. Sad but true.
These would be... That comic is from 1972.
I was 64, so I was, 8 years old, man.
20 cents.
It's true. My 50-cent allowance bought me 2 comics and a pack of baseball cards.
A pack of smokes.
And a pack of Camel Straights, exactly.
You get your issue of Flash with your 14-page Kerry Bates Irv Novik story, then your Green Lantern Green Arrow backup story by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams.
Ooh. Oh, sweet.
I swear, it was a golden age. It truly was a golden age in the Bronze Age.
Yeah, I was going to say, the end of the silver entry.
What a time to be alive.
It was some sort of metal. Mr. John Suntress.
Hello.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm fresh and fancy free from the Chicago Comic Con, and it was great seeing everybody, and we had a wonderful time. I'm guessing.
Way to go.
Well, it's the Wayback Machine.
I heard that Chris got hammered on Friday night.
He was embarrassing, man. Are you kidding me?
That is a fucking safe bet.
Mike Allred had to hold his hair while he was throwing up. It was really sad.
Somewhere, Chris poured beer on himself.
An entire beer on himself.
We actually saw some guys whenever we were at the in-stock trades and DCBS sale. Some guys that came up, they lived there in Indiana, and they remember me from Wizard World like 2 years ago of dumping a full beer on my head.
that's really
well,
good.
Well, no.
You went to fix your hat.
Hey, that guy.
I went to fix my hat. I had a beer in my hat. And
the beer on his head.
Was that in front of Eric Larson?
It was in front of Tom and Will Pfeiffer.
Thank God Will still talks to us. All right.
I'm looking forward to hanging out. I had a great time hanging out with
Will. I regret I didn't get to hang out with Will and talk about
everybody
Grant
missed
Morrison
you.
Like we do every year.
Everyone was asking about you.
Wizard World Chicago.
Well, let everyone know that speaking of InStockTrades.com, they are the sponsor of said show. And InStockTrades.com is the best place for you to buy your collected editions, whether it be omnibus editions, absolute editions, showcases, essentials, trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, etc. If it is collected, you can find it at InStockTrades.com, and everything is marked down 30% to 45%, and all orders over $50 ship for free. And as you've been hearing for a while, and I swear to God we're going to come out with our book club episode here real soon, I know if you still haven't read the Justice League International Volume 1, you can pick it up at InStock for $9.54. That is 47% off the cover price.
My God, what a deal.
That's coming up soon. All right, let's jump in. We've got a bunch of comics to talk about. Tom, I know that you are chomping at the bit, so I'm going to sit back with an ice-cold Miller High Life here and let you go.
The first book I want to talk about is The Last Days of Animal Man, number 3 of 6.
Great series.
Written by Jerry Conway, comics legend, with art by Chris Batista doing pencils and Dave Mikus doing inks.
And who's that fine cover artist that we enjoy?
Brian Bolin.
Oh, the memories he brings back.
Doing covers. This has been the biggest surprise for me of the last couple months of how much I have thoroughly enjoyed this book. There's a lot of guys that are sort of legends of comic book writing who are, I mean, Jerry Conway, I mean, he killed Gwen Stacy. So, I mean, he's...
Firestorm?
Created Firestorm.
Ronnie Raymond?
Like, he wrote Justice League for
ever
years.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, like, with the great Dick Dillon doing art. I mean, this guy,
I mean, this guy was, he's been around forever in comics, left comics for a while, TV, came back to write comics, and has not missed a single step.
Well, he's been writing the entire time. And not just writing any old TVs. He was a very prolific TV writer.
Every great police procedural or detective show featuring your favorite cuddly old man or woman detectives, Jerry Conway probably submitted a script and you saw it on TV.
He has not missed a step. Because a lot of guys, I think sometimes you'll see them come into modern comics and it takes them a little while to get used to. You don't have thought balloons. You don't have the same sort of exposition style that you have. So
the
takes
pacing.
A little while. The pacing's different. He's got it down. So the whole premise of this story is it's kind of like the equivalent of the Marvel End series, sort of. Mm-hmm. This takes place like 15 years in the future. Animal Man's a bit older. Like, it's a potential future. And Animal Man's powers are starting to fade away. Like, his DNA is unraveling. And he's not going to die. But his powers are going to go away. And he's having a midlife crisis about it, and he starts to figure out that he hasn't been the best parent to his kids, his wife. He hasn't been the best husband to his wife. It's a very human story. It continues very much in the tradition of Animal Man being like a place where if you want to do like a very human weird story about a character, you do an Animal Man story.
Absolutely.
And Jerry Conway has done a fantastic one. And this has been my favorite issue of it. So far, we've already seen one where the Green Lantern of Earth is a blue whale,
which is awesome.
Yeah, it's not even a person; it's just a whale floating around with a ring on its chest,
an emblem. Yeah,
but you know, in this issue, you get like this is the most pathetic that the midlife crisis goes through for Buddy, as he's desperate to keep his powers, and he's like, sort of like, oh, we got to do everything you can. And the rest of the Justice League is kind of like, well, maybe you're supposed to lose your powers, like, what are we supposed to do? And he's going to see his kids for the first time in a long time, and one of his daughter is just like, you don't pay attention to me except right now when you need DNA for me to fix your powers. And his son is like, you taught me that the only thing in my life, the only thing that's important is to do your job well, and you shouldn't have a personal life. And his wife is pissed off at him, and like, the best line in the whole issue is like, you know, I was looking for a second chance and I found out that I completely blew the first one and I never even knew that happened.
Wow.
And there's the very end of it. I'm not going to spoil for John specifically.
Thank you, buddy.
But the very end, you're just kind of like, what an ass, you know, that of what Buddy is. But it's the Batista art is also great. I love Chris Batista stuff. Is the faces and like all the emotion in the characters, and it's such a realistic story. Like, you feel bad for him, but you also are like, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a real person like going through a midlife crisis where you're like,
you don't need to buy the red convertible.
It's like, I kind of feel bad for you, but I also kind of like, grow the fuck up, and you know, like, don't be such a fucking baby about what's going on in your life. And there's
sounds like the conversations my wife and I have with each other.
There's also tons of just standard comic book action with villains, and so it's not just all like weepy sitting around looking at each other. It's an extremely well balanced comic book.
That's
really good.
That's what's impressed me from the first two issues that I read, because a lot of books get knocked for heavy characterization as being too talky. And I think Conway, in a way that a lot of new writers that are very well respected, but it seems when it's time for the characterization, the action stops. Not in the case of Animal Man. I mean, this book, it's the inner monologue is going through his mind while he's acting. So you are getting a lot of action during these very deep character moments. And I think, it, like you said, it's a wonderful balance. And
it's been
an
extremely pleasant surprise and been one of the better things I've been reading like the last couple months.
Well, and he said, I interviewed Jerry a month ago on Wordballoon, or 2 months ago now, and I'm really pleased with how great the conversation went. And when this series wraps up, we're going to talk again because, as you say, it's great to see that this revered creator still has a lot to say in comics and didn't come back just because his name is famous. He's got something to offer here. And
yeah, it's a very unique. I don't know if I've quite read the same. There was another thing this week that sort of reminded me of it. It was Final Crisis Aftermath Inc. was sort of a similar story told from the other end of someone who's just getting into being a superhero but having the same problems with his family. Like told from two different ends of the same thing. Like one, it's like this guy's career, Animal Man's career is winding down. Like maybe he should just retire, but he doesn't. It's so weird to see a character desperate.
This amazing Brett Favre parallel.
Yeah, he's like fucking Brett Favre. Yeah, like he doesn't want to stop. Like he's so desperate to keep his powers. He's not going to die if he loses them. Like nothing really horrible is going to happen. And everyone else seems to be like, maybe this. Just as how
has Animal Man talked to the Vikings yet?
He has not talked. He's been talking to the Vikings for months. Just recently told them he's not coming back.
But just as Buddy has always represented the everyman superhero, this is a very common everyman problem. And also you can't help but notice that as he is approaching the senior years of his life, Jerry Conway is as well.
Yeah.
And he told me that when he wrote Spider-Man, he put himself in Peter Parker's shoes and was Peter's age, in his mid to early 20s, late 20s, and that's how he would write Spider-Man. So he felt very comfortable writing this story. And this is a guy who stopped his television career. And I can't help but see the parallels, and that's what I asked him. I think he is more adjusted than Buddy is, but I think it really is. It's a common problem of what do you do when your whole life has been doing this one thing, and now you're in your senior years and are being told by others, you know, maybe it's time to do something else. And it's, if I can't do what I've done all this time, then who am I? And I think the who am I question is always interesting from a story standpoint. And it always leads to good characterization. And the guy's firing on all cylinders. And I think Batista's art is very evocative of when Brian Boland was writing the Animal Man series. And should there ever be an absolute Animal Man, this story will fit very nicely with the Grant Morrison run. It's great. It really, really is great. And I bought it this week.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Cadence Comic Art. You've heard me talk about buying original art on the show before, and now I want to let you know about the best place on the internet to find your next piece of original art. Whether you're looking for that one piece from your favorite artist or you're wanting to build your own comics room art gallery, Cadence Comic Art is the first place you should go. CadenceComicArt.com has the easiest to navigate and most well-organized site for original comic art I've seen. You can find original art from some of Around Comics' favorite artists and past guests of the show, including Scotty Young, Mike Norton, Tim Seeley, Chris Burnham, Jamal Igle, Jeremy Hahn, Ryan Stegman, Sean Murphy, Brent Schoonover, Michael Gatos, and more. And superstar artist David Lloyd has just become the newest creator to join the Cadence Comic Art family of artists. Cadence Comic Art makes buying original comic art fast and easy. They ship worldwide and have fantastic customer service. Check out their brand new site for a full list of artists and see for yourself how easy it can be to start your own art collection at cadencecomicart.com. That's www.cadencecomicart.com. And remember, if you're coming to the Windy City Comic Con, drop by the Cadence Comic Art booth. Well, Mr. Bice,
yes.
What have you brought for us today?
I picked up Fear Agent, which I believe Tom also has.
Yes, this will kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, Fear Agent 27. I really enjoyed this issue.
The end of Eye Against Eye.
Yeah. I liked it, but I felt like through the whole issue that it was definitely leading to those last couple pages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I knew something was going to happen that was going to be completely horrible and make me.
That's how it always ends, though. Yeah. It always ends with something truly fucking horrifying happening to Heath.
You know, yeah. we should, if we're going to talk about this, we should probably really talk about it. So we'll throw up the spoilers ahoy yeah. flag, because I actually do want to talk about this issue.
I need to reread the whole series, I yeah. feel like.
Yeah, yeah. I just recently pulled down the first three trades and started yeah. rereading them. And coming to this issue is kind of hard to start dealing with the end of the series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They got one. They have one arc left. This is the penultimate arc. And we need to mention written by Rick Remender, breakdowns or layouts by Mike Hawthorne.
Yep.
Who Tony Moore described as being a fucking beast yep. On this book, and Tony Moore doing I guess finishes is what you would call them, yep. and it's a beautiful, beautiful interior artwork on this. But yeah, this is the conclusion of Eye Against Eye. So given the setup of kind of what is going on in the story and why at the in the last few pages, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that that wasn't the conclusion to the story.
No, I feel like Tom would do a better job of describing so, this story like, than I would.
The basic premise at this point in the series, there's Heath Houston's got his estranged wife and his mm-hmm. kid, and the Earth has been taken over by the Dressites, which were really there to help them fight off another invasion. So this
Taldians.
Yeah, so there's been a weird civil war, not a civil war, but like a war between them broke out because Heath committed genocide against the Dressites. Sort of mistakenly, like he didn't quite understand what was going on. So this huge battle has started up, and the whole conflict has been between these two. And it comes down to the end where Heath and they agree, like, we need to team up. This has all been a huge mistake. We need to, like, stop this now. There's no point in why we're doing it. And they yeah. agree. And then
this is only going to end in
because
the...
Because their mutual yeah. enemy has figured out time travel. So yeah. the, you know, final couple pages is like... The Dressites and the humans, like, yeah, we're gonna beat them, and then suddenly there's a switch where the humans are all gone, and it's all the weird bionic Tetladians or
those. But you know, and you just know that there is no sunny basket full of roses in for Heath Houston in any of these stories. He's a guy that he gets kicked around.
Do you think he dies in the end? Do you think they actually kill him?
It wouldn't surprise me.
I would almost prefer a Sopranos moment for the end of this series.
They're eating fries.
Yeah, like, and it just ends. Like, you don't know what's going to happen.
I always feel like the end of every arc is with Heath being dead. It's like Heath should probably be dead, because he ends this story with getting a hole blasted in his chest.
Well, this build-up to where, you know, Heath and Char storm the Dressite, you know, yeah. HQ. And
he's, like, maybe not even himself. He's like a duplicate of
cancer-ridden
clone. But then it switches so fast of like, okay, here's the resolution. Oh, they make up. They go to Earth. They wipe out all the feeders on the Earth. The Earth is cleansed, and now they're going to start rebuilding the human race with their Dressite friends. And you're like, this is there's no way that Rick is going to mail this in this quickly.
No.
And then it's like, oh no, it's not real.
It's a horrible ending. It's his daughter. His daughter changes into some weird child cyborg creepy shit and blows a hole in his chest.
What were they all chanting there at the end?
Crush, kill, destroy.
Crush, kill, destroy.
That's the classic robot mantra. Absolutely.
That's what you truly is. Robot. Crush, kill, destroy. I always love every time Fear Agent comes up, is it's like a furious barrage of just like horrible stuff, shooting aliens, like weird sexual like innuendo. It's just like it's always interesting. It's always high action.
It's the cross between AC, you know, sci-fi and heavy metal. I mean, it really is in terms of like, you know, it covers all the spectrum of sci-fi and through the decades and everything. That's what always makes it interesting.
It'll be in the end, Rick brings up the fact that they're working on the last arc mm-hmm. that'll be coming up, and
they're not going to solicit it until it's all in the can. So work for late 2009, early 2010, I would say.
Just kill Heath, but Heath should die from like a heart attack. Like, I don't know, I'm kind of very hoping... like, or choking on a sandwich.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. Choking on a chicken bone.
I suppose you can tell the last story and then when the eventual Fear Agent movie, if, you know, I am still of the belief that eventually it will happen.
I hope so.
And I hope that, I guess you could go back and just tell a previously untold tale of Heath's,
well, the,
if
they,
that
they,
does happen.
That's one of the nice things about the book, and this one has one as well, but the tales of the Fear Agent backups have become a real staple of the series. There's even a really nice trade out.
You
that,
well,
of
you
the
could kill him
of,
and bring him back.
Well, that's
they
what
killed
I mean.
Him, like,
that's
yeah,
true,
they've already done it.
That's true, too.
Like, so, they've literally killed him and brought him back as a clone.
That's several times.
Yeah, that's a good point. I read it in trade, and it always satisfies, and that's the thing. I really do like to sit down with it and enjoy the full story.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those series that, you know, it may not have always had the greatest sales numbers, but I think it's going to be a book that will stick around in people's consciousness for a while. And it's one that, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
The art has always been fucking awesome.
Fantastic. I think people will talk about this book. Much like people, you know, I think still to this day, talk about a book like Alien Legion that I think had a lot of fans that really
I think
loved
people
that.
Remember Fear Agent well because when they eventually put out the omnibus of all of it, all of the art in it will be fucking fantastic.
Fucking awesome.
There will not be like a weird issue that is like, oh, this art isn't good because the art has always been
this is the book
solid.
That introduced me to Jerome Opeña. And I love Tony Moore's work.
Yep.
Jerome is unbelievable.
Did you guys see that he's doing a Moon Knight book now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That looks like it might be pretty
good. Did you read his Punisher stuff that he
did?
Yes,
sir. Yeah. That was nice.
Yeah. That was very incredible. Nice.
And that's what I was going to say, as Rick Starr continues to ascend, people will go back to Fear Agent, much like they've gone back to Bendis's original work, Brubaker's original work.
A nice announcement regarding Strange Girl this week, I saw.
Yeah. Or Nightmare.
Oh, was it Nightmare?
It was Nightmare, wasn't
Nightmare.
It?
Okay.
Nightmare was optioned for a film. I mean, that's Rick is a guy that thinks high concept. He's a guy who has really good story ideas. He's been able to successfully bring those to the Marvel Universe and is getting rewarded with Dr. Voodoo and with Iron Man. Oh, in a good way, man. Hey, and I feel like Bendis told me, it's like, hey, we're thinking about a regular book. And literally Rick was like, please let me do Dr. Voodoo. And he's like, when a guy is that like serious and that passionate about it, of course you're going to do Dr. Voodoo.
Yeah.
So that's cool. He's doing Power Man and Iron Fist as well.
That's going to be sweet.
Not to mention what he's currently doing with Punisher. So, and I'm really looking forward to that Last Days of Crime that's coming out from, is it Radical or IDW? I forget who's
I think it's
Radical.
Is it Radical?
I think is Radical. Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, Rick is going to have a great 2009 and 10 as the year and months continue. And Fear Agent is just another great thing that he's doing on his own.
When the giant collect edition comes out, you'll see Tony Moore art.
Yep.
See Mike Hawthorne.
All the guys that have like contributed those Tales of the Fear Agent stories. I mean, it's a great fucking series. It really is. And there's several great collections. If you haven't started reading this, there's by all means jump in on volume one and you're gonna love it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. My favorite ongoing for the last several years.
Yep.
I mean, we talked to Rick several times, so if you haven't heard about Fear Agent,
he's coming up this month on Word Balloon too. So,
oh good,
oh yeah,
good. Speaking of art,
yeah,
there's a book that is out that is written by one of my favorite guys.
Oh, and I know,
and I was talking to Greg I was talking to him today.
It's going to be detective. You're going to tell
and I said, Greg, I don't care about one word that you have written in this book because all I do is look at the art.
Death, taxes, and
that art is gorgeous.
Death, taxes, Chris and Rucka are like the three things you can depend on in life.
J.H. Williamson,
it is good.
Ridiculously good.
You know, Greg. You know, I was kind of joking about not caring about Greg's story. It is a fantastic story. Greg hits all the beats. You know, Chris dialogue. It's really well written. Very secondary to J.H. Williams' art. It is unbelievably beautiful. Every page is a framed piece of art. I think the unsung hero on this is Eisner Award winning colorist Dave Stewart. And kind of the stories, you may have told me this, John, that he kept sending the art to him, and Greg and John were just not read enough. Needs to be redder. And this book, it is like this vivid blood red that is just pops off of every page. Ah. So have you, Kyle, seen this?
I've taken a peek at it. I'm kind of trade waiting on it. I know that's kind of bad with this book.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I've flipped through it at the store, and it,
you know, I've been a big fan of J.H. Williams for a long time.
Sure.
You know,
Prometheus is incredible.
Prometheus, I loved his Batman run with Morrison, the League.
Oh, the League of Batman. Yeah,
yeah. The
Seven Soldiers, when he did the Seven Soldiers stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
I think this is the best stuff he's ever done.
I do, too, because I think it's him at his most experimental. And within the book itself, especially when we get things from Alice's perspective, the art changes in very interesting ways. And I know I credited him on a Word Balloon episode with Bendis when we were talking about this book, because people were just asking in general what Brian had been reading. And I said, have you read Detective yet with Ruck? And he goes, no, it's on my pile. And I'm like, dude, you got to pick it up, because Josh Flanagan made this point on iFanboy, and I always want to credit him because he hit it on the head. There are pages where J.H. is channeling Alex Ross. There are pages where he's channeling David Mack.
Yeah.
And there are just there's a lot of experimentation going on here to the success of the story. And you're right, Chris. Greg is also, on top of that, writing another solid, tight Greg Rucka story with a great female hero. It's so easy to dismiss this book because it's outside of all the post-Battle for the Cowl going on. And taking nothing away from the story, because Dick Grayson as Robin and everything that's happening in the Batman universe is very interesting. And it's a good time to be a Batman fan. It's Batwoman had such a rocky debut because of the love affair that the press had with the idea of a lipstick lesbian, blah, blah, blah. But the great thing is that Greg had this story ready to roll, and the time has come, and it's a great book. And two issues in, there's a reason why this thing sells out and is not available at every store that I go to. It's fucking great.
Well, you know, I know that Quietly's only going to be on Batman and Robin for one more issue, and then
a break.
Yeah, and then a break, and then it's going to come back. But for this window of time, these two Bat books are the prettiest books on the shelves.
Yeah. They withheld the release so that they could kind of be able to do this on a monthly schedule. And by the way, don't dismiss the backup feature as well in Detective.
Oh, the question backup's great.
Absolutely. Greg, again, writing wonderful stuff.
Cully Hamner.
Cully Hamner showing a different side of his art. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. This is a really great book, and a case where the co-feature, I love that phrase. I got to use the buzzwords as opposed to the backup. But no, it's very satisfying. And Elegy, this first Batwoman story, is going to be a great story that will be able to stand on its own when it is collected, and not have to worry about, oh, yeah, that's the Justice League stories when Superman was blue and it sticks out like a sore thumb. Batman is a supporting character. We don't know if it's Bruce or Dick in the first issue. It doesn't matter. And again, it will hold up 10 years from now when they look back at Batwoman. And it's going to be this very cool debut.
There are a lot of extremely pretty Batman books, because Batman and Robin is absolutely
awesome,
gorgeous. Yeah. Like the last issue was I would have. I would marry it. I would marry
the
would
second
marry
issues
two.
Of both books. I think
I agree
with
that.
The first issues came out, and you're like, wow.
I had sex with both issues.
Did you?
Sex on paper.
And a three-way with two comic.
You can't
books.
CGC that issue now.
Well, that quietly splash page of
it's a point.
It's a real splash page now.
You could. It's a point four.
Speaking of the Batman and Robin, and also this one, two new really cool Rogues Gallery editions with Pig in Batman and Robin
and Alice.
Alice is fucked up.
Well, and that's Greg. And that's the thing, man. I mean, don't get me wrong.
You're stalking a really creepy, weird, fucked up dude.
It's the J.H. Williams show from a visual, but really, when you get down to story and stuff, Alice.
Alice in Wonderland constantly.
Yeah.
Everything's.
Oh, Alice. Lewis Carroll fans are going to love this. I mean, it's a fun exercise, and it's fun to watch Greg have play with this and present the character this way. It gives Batwoman a very interesting debut criminal,
and she's a lipstick lesbian. Come on, guys.
Hot.
Right?
No, but I like her
Everyone,
dad.
Everyone, right?
I like her dad. I also like some of the ideas that Greg discussed with me about the series and the approach that Batwoman has to crime fighting that is very different than the rest of the Gothamites.
Oh, sure.
That, you know, as someone with a military background and stuff, that her arsenal of equipment is really small and speaks more to today's technology as opposed to what was the futuristic look of the supercomputer in the Batcave and stuff. Like, she's really operating on two laptops and a Wi-Fi and very small mobile Yep. Exactly. But
Blackberry.
But yes, but very high. Yeah, but very high tech stuff.
But you can also tell she's still new to the game. She's yes. still making sure. rookie mistakes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a cool journey, and
she's a lesbian.
Very, very good.
But yes, issues. Yes, Tom, she is a lesbian.
We like it.
And she's a lesbian.
Mr. Sundress.
I want to point out one of my pals,
The
New Avengers, written by Brian Bendis. And I'm sorry, I don't know the current issue number.
He's your pal. Number 55 just came out.
Thank you, sir.
I don't even read it, and I know what number.
Thank you.
Fucking nerd Excellent. I am.
Yes, that's bad.
Isn't that terrible. Sad? Yeah. What a – God, I need a fucking life.
You're getting ready to get married, so here it comes.
I don't even read it, and I know what the,
we're still living in the Dark Reign 616 universe, but I think in a good way there are still interesting stories to be told beyond how do we attack Norman this month, and the Hood continues to be explored by Bendis after the debut of Brian Vaughn, and I think that Dark Reign has given the Hood the opportunity to kind of
we were talking about Remender. I like what Remender did with the Hood. I've never cared about that character, but in Punisher, seems like a perfect foil for that character.
Well, and you know, it's interesting when the Kingpin is out of the picture, with the exclusion of Daredevil, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, who does come in to fill the vacuum and stuff? And it's an interesting combination of crime and magic with Parker Robbins. And also, they're still dealing with the fallout of Dr. Voodoo becoming the new Sorcerer Supreme. I still love saying Dr. Voodoo in my Stan Lee voice because it's exactly something he would have come up with in 63. Yeah. Better, Dr. Voodoo. That's scary. But, you know, and I like I really like the way that the Hood has to now operate his disappointment of not becoming the Sorcerer Supreme. And also just this exploration of a lot of B and C list Marvel villains that are kind of figuring out where they are in the Dark Reign world and who's really calling the shots. And they were very happy to follow Parker Robbins, the Hood, but then find out that Norman's really the guy kind of pulling Parker's strings, and they don't like it. And this starts a new problem for the New Avengers that involves Stark Tech. I always loved that, too, in the 616 universe. Mm-hmm. And I like this kind of Marvel speak that's happening when they describe technology. It's Doom Tech. It's Stark Tech.
Yes.
It's, you know, I haven't heard Richards Tech yet or Baxter Tech. I don't know if they call that for anything that Reed comes up.
Well, Reed doesn't share with anybody.
That's true. But
especially Hank.
He's a real dick about that shit.
There's a power dampening device that the New Avengers have been using to their advantage.
Stark Tech uses Reed Tech to make their stuff.
it's been reclaimed by the villains, and now it's being turned on them. And I think that's the start of a very interesting story. And again, what I like about the New Avengers, and I've liked it since the start, it's fun. As much as I've been a traditional Avenger fan, it is fun seeing the new combination of characters and how they act with each other. And I think this issue, again, has that good balance of action and character that we were talking about in Animal Man, but with talkie scenes, but again, effective talkie scenes. Great scene with Peter and Jessica Jones. And just, you know, kind of Peter embarrassed by, you know, the fact that a lot of the New Avengers know who he is. And there's some good comedy there with him and Jessica. And also just a more insight in how the rest of the team kind of looks at Peter. And Peter is always that guy that never was comfortable being around the Avengers and really was kind of almost intimidated by them. By the same token, in this new status quo, Peter comes out and says it. None of you guys like what's happening right now because Norman's in charge. And everyone's not sure about your actions. And now you're all living that life that I'm living. Mm-hmm. And it's really tough to be a hero when the target is on you. Hawkeye has a very Clint Barton, I should say, Ronan, whatever.
It was
boo.
Whatever.
Boo. Boo. I know. I still love Clint Barton. I'm not crazy that he's in another costume, but it's
okay.
But no, he has this kind of crisis of conscience of, hey, man, Norman's in the way. We got to get rid of him. And there's a very good discussion among the team.
I'm ready for the heroes in the Marvel Universe to stop being a big bunch of fucking pussies.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of Clint's call to action in terms of, well, and also he says to Peter, hey, you know, it's about time we did something that you've had an opportunity to do for years in your career and never did. And actually, Spider-Man gives him a nice fuck you back and says, I'm sorry, I thought we're supposed to be better than that.
Yeah.
I thought we're heroes. And I thought we're supposed to be heroes even when it's tough
you should
and
do,
not just
easy. You should
easy.
Do John versus the New Avengers.
No, I'm like Sally
amped
Floyd.
Up for this shit, man.
No, but it is.
Fuck you.
No, and that's
fuck you.
That's the attitude.
Ronan and Spider-Man.
Well, there you go. But no, I think it makes for a very interesting dynamic,
And the Avengers continued entertainment.
That actually is really, really interesting because the tables have been turned on who were always the walk in the sunlight, card carrying members of the Avengers. It's like, and Spider-Man has never been that way. So this is the first time they've had to deal with it.
Yeah.
And they're,
They don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how. And they really are at this crisis of, well, how do we attack this? It's easy when you're the cavalry and everyone's, thank God these guys showed up.
Yeah.
And now, like I said, when the target is on you, what do you do?
It's hard to do the right thing whenever.
And Bucky Cap continues to entertain me in interesting ways. And Brian is able to use him without affecting the story that Ed is telling in the Captain America book. And there's a very funny scene because Bucky's been very gracious to kind of give them their places, their hangout and stuff. And, you know, it's kind of like inviting your friends over to spend like a couple weeks at your house. And after like the third or fourth week, you're like,
can you go home now?
Yeah.
It smells like dude.
Who didn't flush the toilet?
Pretty much. And so there's a good balance of comedy and action and characterization in this book. Yeah. I like it.
I think that's something that Bendis has been doing really well with these titles is he's been bringing personality to a lot of these characters that wasn't there before, especially in the Avengers books where these characters are very one dimensional. You know, 5 years ago, and now you're suddenly seeing a lot of interpersonal drama, and you see the comedy moments that you never saw before. It's really interesting.
Luke Cage and Peter Parker are my favorite comedy team.
Yeah, that's been the best.
Yeah, and there's, you know, Jessica gives a little reveal about it, what Luke really thinks of Peter in this book, that it's like, really? It's great. Honestly, I think Brian's got a great handle on all these guys, and yes, I think their voices are very individual, and it is easy to dismiss this as a, yeah, fine, you know eventually Norman's not going to be in charge anymore.
Oh, sure.
The journey is worth it, and I enjoy
it. Eventually we all die.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, man. So, yeah, you know, people can roll their eyes and go, yeah, I'll be back when it's, you know, when the Avengers are doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's fine, but in the meantime, you're missing out.
What are they supposed to be doing?
Well, you know, saving the day and being the Earth's mightiest heroes, clearly. But that's fine. I like the journey, and I think it makes for very interesting stories, and Brian's doing a good job.
I had a speech impediment when I was a child, John, and I would never.
Well, I'm sorry if you feel this way, but I'm just stating what I feel here. Okay,
so I feel like you're really
fine. Then, you know, something. Read your own books, and I'll just take my G.I. Joes and go home.
Read your own shitty books.
Yeah, well, fine. Fuck you then. Okay. Why do you make me feel so? Why do you make me feel so small? I'm dragging in your deep shadow. What I become?
Tom Caters, go.
I have two books that I want to talk about, and there was a tie beforehand. Which one should I talk about?
Razzle.
All right, here we go. Razzle's awesome. No, that's not
right. All right.
If you haven't been reading Razzle by Jeff Smith, this is pretty much the exact correct book to get me to read something. Like, it's a parallel universe story. We've talked about it before.
I love parallel universes.
But this last issue really like amped up the level of what's going on, because you're starting to piece everything together. You're starting to understand what the main character, how he got to where he is and being able to travel between dimensions. You're starting to see the tie between all the female characters in the story. You're starting to see why he's infatuated with this one girl in a parallel universe, because it's pretty much an opportunity to fix like a failed relationship from another that really turned out really bad. And you're starting to see all the pieces start to fit together. And what started off as like, in only 5 issues, it's gone from you not quite know what's going on, then it's a parallel universe story, and then it's like an espionage story, to now like a weird love story. Like all in 5 issues, and Jeff Smith's done a really great job.
How does it start? I've never read this, and I don't know much about it.
It's basically the story is it's this guy who has machinery from the Philadelphia experiment, like based on the Philadelphia experiment, that he can go to parallel worlds. And what he's been doing is he's been going to parallel worlds and stealing art. Like, he'll go to a parallel world and steal a Picasso, come back to his homeworld and sell it, and you can't tell the difference because Picasso did paint it. It's just not the one
from our Earth. Yeah.
So he's been doing this, and like he's been going to all these worlds, and he's infatuated with this like prostitute in this one world, and you start to piece together everything that's been happening. You start to realize that there's these duplicates of everyone on different worlds, but they don't all have the same roles.
And you you assume that he has stolen this machine, or he happened upon this.
Yeah, but he's
then you find out that he's actually a scientist.
He's the scientist that helped develop it, and he thought it was a mistake. And you start to see, at first you meet two different characters, and you don't think they're quite the same person, and you realize they are, and you start to realize that he's developing emotions for a parallel version of a woman that he had an affair with on one world. And it's this really weird, complicated, but like slightly uncomplicated story. Like, it's just really about this guy who's kind of fucked up, and he's trying to like piece together his own version of his life. But imagine if you had access to unlimited chances to like get your life the way you want to do it, but you can't quite get there, you know? And there's a mysterious, like, lizard man character that knows what he's doing. He knows that he travels between worlds. And he's sort of like this police officer, like this interdimensional CIA agent who wants him to do something and can track him. So there's this specter of this person watching over him the whole time. And the art is really awesome. And the thing I love about it the most is, I love Bone.
Yeah.
This is not Bone. This is completely different. Yeah, it is like it is different. It's adult. It's awesome. It's sci-fi and character stuff. And
just flipping through the issue I have sitting here, it looks very cinematic.
It's really cool to see someone who has done something so lasting as Bone and then do something so different. Like, just, you would not know. Like, if you were able to separate out being able to sort of recognize styles out of stuff, like, if you could make it, like, you can kind of, I mean, you can tell it's Jeff Smith, art. But if you were able to separate that out and just, like, are these two books by the same person? I think you would have a really hard time saying the same guy that did Bone is writing and doing Razzle.
That's cool.
So, yeah, I mean, it's and it's incredible.
He's he's one of the guests at C2E2 in April, right?
Yeah, he's the second guest of honor that was announced. One of my favorite trades that came out last year is the Razzle trade. It is oversized. And
what issues does it collect?
The first three.
Okay.
It's issues 1, 2, and 3.
We're up to 5, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's oversized. Once again, it's black and white, but it's a beautiful presentation, and it is only 13 bucks. So
such a deal.
If you like sci-fi, if you like this kind of mystery, sci-fi mystery story that Tom is describing, you really should do yourself a favor and go out and pick up the Razzle trade. It's in stock probably has it for it's going to be under 10 bucks.
Cool.
And completely worth it.
Does it come out quarterly? How does it come out?
Doing it quarterly, and now he's going to up it up to bi-monthly. It was quarterly, and it was like 30 pages. Now he's going to do it bi-monthly at 22 pages.
Okay.
And but he says he's open to altering the schedule depending on how he wants to sort of tell the story. And it's one of those books where I'm just like, whenever it comes out, I'm going to read it, and I'm going to enjoy it.
So is the volume 1 through 3, is it a, so is it a complete story, or?
It's really kind of the first arc, I guess.
Okay.
It's kind of, I mean, it's just.
I mean, I don't want, believe me, I'm not looking for it to end.
Well, no, think about it as the first three episodes of a really good TV show, and it gives you enough that you want to come back for issue 4.
Cool.
But it sets up the story very well in the first three issues.
This kind of looks a lot like, it reminds me of Stray Bullets, just kind of thumbing through too, in terms of the visual storytelling and everything, and that real people kind of aspect to it.
Yeah, I can see a little Laugh-Em in there.
No, I
got some laugh on him.
That's awesome. And I mean, Jeff Smith is, Bone is incredible.
I'm infatuated with Razzle.
But I can appreciate that, because that just shows you how great of a creator that he is, that he can step outside of something like Bone and come up with something.
He's got all these chicks on parallel worlds that he's boning, man.
He is a multi-dimensional Casanova.
It ain't easy. Cool. He's got to put on a mask and weird turbines and shit. That's pretty cool.
It is very cool.
It's like the adult version. It's like if you took 8-year-old Tom and extrapolated exactly to 30, like without any changes, like It's a dude who travels between parallel worlds with like turbines, and he's like banging chicks.
Okay.
Yeah, and then it's also very well written and interesting. So it's got a little bit of everything.
And the art's great.
Yeah. I love too how the Philadelphia experiment is this great launching point for stories, and it really was.
Yeah, and you don't really know it until later. Like he doesn't put that in at the beginning. Like it starts off, and you know
that he's traveling.
What he's traveling, but you don't get. As you go farther along, you figure out that, like, oh, he didn't just steal it. He's one of the scientists that, like, worked on these on these notes from Tesla. Oh, this girl is the parallel version of another girl that he knew. Okay. Like, it all starts to piece together as you go farther along.
Cool.
All the pieces start to fit together, and you know why this is happening, like, why certain things are important.
Very cool.
It's good.
It's great. It's great. Cool. Mr. Bice.
Yes. I have. Have you guys talked much about Wednesday's comics?
We have not talked about Wednesday comics since it came out at all.
I haven't talked about it at all yet. I haven't been around.
Neither have I, actually, and I'm looking forward to talking about it.
I have been enjoying these immensely.
Shit, yeah.
Okay.
Fuck yeah, asshole.
As an old school comic reader, I love newsprint. It feels great. That's a huge sensation for me. I don't know why, but picking up a book and feeling the newsprint, and also the Sunday strip format is kind of nice. Yeah. Like that whole one page. Being able to read from top to bottom and getting your whole story in one sitting right there is really nice. And for me, Commandy has been probably the best.
Ryan Sook is
blowing my mind.
Oh, my God. I knew Ryan Sook was good. I didn't know Ryan Sook was the man.
Channeling Hal Foster and Gary Gianni kind of Prince Valiant storytelling in this story. And taking nothing away from Dave Gibbons, the writer, it's a classic Commandy story. A classic... That evokes the Kirby run, but also, you know,
it's Commandy Prince Valiant. It really is.
It is.
It really is.
I don't know who does the coloring on it, but the coloring is really nice too.
Oh yeah.
Oh, maybe Ryan's doing it. Doesn't say on the page here.
Ryan Sook is I think the breakout star.
Yeah, that's my favorite. I mean, and there's
the Commandy one is fucking. I want a Commandy like omnibus. Why is there not?
I know there was going to be a showcase that was scheduled, and I think maybe it fell off because during
it was supposed to have like the Atomic Knights.
It was all the great disaster stuff. Yeah, you know, and yeah, fold in all that stuff that they put into. Was it 52 or the Battle of Bloodhaven? Or
but because of all the reprint rights, it got like with all the like the Secret Society of Supervillains and all those where they're having issues trying to figure out how to divide up.
Yeah, the royalties. Yeah, it is several. It's a bunch of teams of creators and things. So, but go ahead, Kyle. We'll keep talking.
Whatever you guys have to say. I've also been really enjoying Carl Kershaw's The Flash.
Oh my God, yes,
that's my favorite one. Actually,
all right, everyone wants to know what Tom thinks.
That's actually my favorite one because it's like it's sort of like a Dick Van Dyke-ish like.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it
like is. Sort absolutely. Of like,
wow, I hadn't thought of that.
That's
like,
very good.
It's like a Dick Van Dyke sitcom-y version of The Flash.
Sure.
Like Gorilla Grodd's in it, but the real problem is like Iris is pissed off at him, and he's trying to like figure out how to keep their relationship together, and that's the real
dilemma.
Antagonist in the story. I mean, it's like it's not really Grodd. It's like him.
It's Barry's life.
There's time to two Flashes at the same time because one's traveled back to try and fix things, and now they're both trying to fix things. And it's just sort of like they're going to trip over the ottoman at some point. And like,
when does Maury Amsterdam walk
in? Yeah, exactly.
See, my wife Pickles and I were just talking to Gorilla Grodd.
It's such a, and he's got the split thing with the Iris West portions a little different. And then the Flash part, but it's sort of funny and sort of it's got a different flavor than you would think that the other ones have. It's got a Mary Worth style,
or Brenda, or even a Brenda Starr. Yeah, I mean it is that kind of female reporter.
Yeah,
like you know, or even more like you say, Mary Worth soap opera, Apartment 3G.
Yeah,
well, I love that it's these overlapping dual strips. It's two strips on one page.
It's two strips.
I bet it works out. I bet they stick together. I bet a third Flash gets involved. Like he travels back farther, and they're
awesome.
Just both like, oh man, now there's a third one. I've come back to help you fix everything. No,
in tandem with.
It never works. Didn't you see Duplicity?
Yeah. In tandem with Flash Rebirth, I'm really glad that Iris is getting her character back to where it belongs. I hated Iris as a grandmother. I hated Iris when they aged her for the purposes of telling Bart stories and having it make more sense. They are the best superhero couple that I know of. And sorry, Sue and Ralph Dibny fans. Iris, I always thought, was kind of the rock for Barry. And went from being
kind of pissed all over Lois there, didn't
Well, you? I was going to say kind of, well, because yes, you know,
well,
because,
Superman
sorry,
spent years trying to like teach her lessons.
Silly Lois. No, you're right. And I was indoctrinated.
Let go, you.
And I was indoctrinated in that version. This was the marriage that nobody like got upset about when, or, you know, doesn't wish that it didn't happen the way that a lot of maybe us old people do in terms of, I like Superman and Lois, and I like Lois a lot as a character, but Iris never got her due, and it was like Iris and Barry were a very good working married couple long before it was a good idea to put Clark and Lois together.
Woman.
Yes.
There's a great Flash story, the next Tom versus the Flash, where Barry forgets who he is. He doesn't remember who he is, and she's in an electric car, and he stops her, and he's like, this is nothing for a woman to drive. She shouldn't be driving a car, and she's just like, in her mind, she's like, fuck you. I'm going to yell at you when we get why would you say that?
But also, man, I'm telling you, the Cuberts on Sergeant Rock, are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding
me? Hey, let's take a second to give Mr. DiDio some applause.
Yes, what
did
I do?
The Metal Men.
He's writing a very fun Metal Men story.
Who would have thought, huh?
Yeah. Hey, man, you know, he wrote a good Superboy. I mean, Dan is a good writer, and I'm happy that he's given himself a platform to do stuff. So
pleasantly surprised by how good the stuff looks printed on it.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not bad paper, sharp. Folks. It's not bad paper.
Well, yeah. I know you're a paper, texture paper expert.
I'm a paper dork. It's not bad paper.
The Metamorpho ones.
If newsprint would last forever, I would definitely prefer to go back to.
Sure.
The first.
Well, the printing is so much better. And that paper is, you compare that paper to books from the 70s, that is much better paper.
Yeah.
And the printing.
We can. I have paper from the 70s in my bag.
And the printing process is so much more advanced now than it was. I mean, you just look at the color palette. You never, the stuff that you're seeing, the Commandy, never could have been printed like that in the 70s.
Sure.
No effing way.
Sure.
I desperately want a Commandy book.
Yeah.
Like something Commandy.
I hope there will be room because of this for that. The way they found room for Jonah Hex in the regular series.
Just because
it's not going to be a big seller.
I think
the
Commandy one's the one that like everybody loves.
In
the Commandy one. Like let's put out the old Commandy stuff and not an archive.
Oh, but
as,
you know,
Azzarello and Rizzo on Batman is a great solid Batman detective story, and I look forward to talking to. And at this point, we have already at least had one initial conversation at Chicago Comic Con, but really looking forward to talking to Brian Azzarello about that. It doesn't surprise me, but it's so funny to come off of 100 issues of 100 Bullets and tell the epic story that he did to see this kind of 12-page, 12-part shorty, but totally worth.
What's up,
this
shorty?
Element. Love Metamorpho, Neil Gaiman. I mean,
Allred on that is amazing.
Yes, and it's classic Metamorpho. Yeah. I mean, it really, man, it feels like Ramona Freyden and Bob Haney doing a story in the 60s, and just the silliness and the fun of Rex Mason and Sapphire and what's his face, Simon Stagg. Yeah, it's and great to see Element
Rex
Girl in the current
issue. Totally gonna bang Sapphire.
You think?
Right up, yeah.
You think?
Always about to.
That's cool. Love Demon and Catwoman. What the fuck is that? But it works.
I love it.
I know,
awesome.
But it's like
it makes sense.
Let's put these two together, and it's like, all right.
The Dead Man story. I'm not wild about the Teen Titans, and the Wonder Woman has yet to really kind of sink in with me. So
I'm not wild about the Superman one either. Superman one.
I love Bermeo's art.
Yeah,
and actually,
Bermeo's stuff is beautiful.
I really
the
like what Akurdi's doing. I like the story.
I like
Akurdi's
the art.
Doing.
I don't think it's the best way of telling that story.
Yeah.
I think it's a little broken up weirdly. It's a little like, and the Green Lantern one I think has kind of the same problem sometimes where you don't see Green Lantern enough. Sometimes you kind of like
they did that in week two, but then in week three it kind of went
like
back
there's
to,
like a panel, one panel with Green Lantern in it, where it's like really you should sort of space it out in a way where like the thing that makes the Flash one and all the other ones really great is like you see the Flash a lot, and Carl Kershaw's figured out a way to have Barry Allen in it
at the same time
that the Flash is in it by having him be like the also travel back in time. So
you know, Paul Pope's Adam Strange.
Oh,
love it, beautiful. Great. Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
And a Ran that I Ran. I'll say Ran. That I'm not used to seeing.
I just
a very
love
barbaric Ran.
Evil fucking orangutans.
Sure.
Hell yeah.
Evil baboons. Just
and
like
you know, Vince was kind of poo-pooing the Supergirl. I've really come to
I love
like
the Supergirl.
I'm sorry. I know it's
me playing to type by saying I disagree with Vince on something, but yeah, I do. I really,
it's funny.
It is funny, and that's the thing. And I can appreciate it feeling like it doesn't fit because so many of these others are really classic adventure strips. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of like
it's a comedy strip,
exactly. And just like there's room for family circus
like
at Peanuts.
I like the idea of Streaky. I just like a super cat and super dog like out of control running around. Like when are we gonna see though like the little trail of where Streaky's gone following through the neighborhood like in family circus.
Well, and it also it plays to it. I don't think it's come out yet because I'm not a big Johnny DC regular reader, but I know that they've been toying with that Supergirl Adventures of in the 11th grade or in the 8th grade, whatever.
I think
it is.
It's come out.
Okay, there you go. But I mean, that's it feels like that in terms of it being a silly happy story like that, which is good. Yeah. I like that. And the Teen Titans stuff, at first I didn't like it, and I've come to appreciate it.
Okay.
I like the art, and I just appreciate the difference. Hats off to Mark Chiarella, the art director.
Oh, I love the variety in it.
Yes.
I saw a tweet today that it was sad in a, yeah, but you're still doing some very cool stuff.
Oh, James Robinson.
James Robinson said, I'm announcing to the world that it kills me that I'm not working on Wednesday Comics.
I'm sure. Well, that's honestly, the response has been amazing. And I don't think they've said yet that they're going to do it again. I hope this becomes a regular summer event.
Yeah, an annual. And,
yeah, because I think that's the perfect way to do it. Don't rush it.
Just do it and three months a year during the summer.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, because I appreciate the other experience that came post-52. Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious that a weekly isn't always going to work if it's just like if it's every week, then it's less of an event.
Well, after 3 years, it's...
So judiciously pick the right people to do these stories. And also, I'm enjoying reading them as weeklies. I look forward to when they're collected to see how they read as one complete story. Yeah. You know?
And I think this lends itself to introducing younger readers to the books.
Absolutely.
Too, because I picked up that first issue and I thought, I don't know anything about some of these characters and I'm loving everything I'm reading and the art. There's a variety of art. It caters to so many different people. Like, I could hand this entire thing to my nephew and probably get him hooked on three different titles.
Sure.
I hear
it. I think it's perfect for especially the teenagers.
What do we all think of Kyle Baker's Hawkman? Because honestly, I've seen a lot of negative stuff, and it's like, I'm not seeing the negative. I got to be honest. I think it's beautiful, and I like his and Paul Pope's use of empty space.
Yeah.
And they're
using the full page.
Yeah. Well, and it's a very open story. And I think that's interesting. And really, I like the contrast of art, going from strip to strip. I love the colors. I really think
it is so diverse. Yeah. Each story, it reads different. It looks different. Very few people are going to read all of Wednesday's comics and like every story. But there's a story in there for everybody.
I would agree with that. And I also think that for something that is only how many pages? 15 pages?
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time reading that compared to a 22-page monthly.
Absolutely.
I read the Commandy one like three times.
Seriously, and yeah, no kidding, man. And I really, it's become a weekly tradition for me to like go to Starbucks with this thing and really sit for a couple hours and pour through this.
And it's beautiful.
And it is, and I really, it is a great book to take your time with. So I think it's well worth the $3.99. Honestly, the people that knock it for the little things and stuff, you're missing the big picture, and you're missing a wonderful, wonderful book.
Who, if they do a volume two, which if it sells well, I would assume that they will. Who would you like to see as some of the creators in a volume two?
I'd be interested to see Grant Morrison confined to 12 pages to tell a page a week story. I think that would be interesting. I'm trying to think from an art standpoint. I don't know if Somni's big enough as a name, but I'd like to see Chris trying to tackle something that.
I think Chris Sprouse. That would be cool. That'd be really nice. I could see
Eric Canetti.
I'd like to see Eric Canetti. I think he could do that.
I think Cameron Stewart is a guy that's been mentioned. So
sure. I'm trying to think of any like who are some other guys that
Marcos Martin.
That would be pretty cool.
honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing some guys come back if their schedules would allow it, because like watching Allred do Metamorpho. Yeah. I mean, it lends itself to, ooh, wouldn't it be great to see him do another Silver Age, like Aquaman. Like, I really would like to see in the next one an undersea Aquaman adventure.
Yeah.
So there's a story that I'd like to see in the next volume.
There's some guys that maybe we don't see a whole lot. You would just mention one, Kyle, but what about like Jeff Darrow?
Wow.
I don't, that's, you know,
or maybe even, you know, get him
working,
said,
get him start working, get him right working now. And I think by 2011, we'll be ready for volume three. I love you, Jeff.
John,
you know,
John brought up Gary Gianni.
Gary Gianni would be great. Yeah,
I would love to see him do a DC book.
Doesn't it drive you crazy that we live in Chicago and we have to go online to read Prince Valiant?
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, and it's like we have this genius guy doing this genius comic strip. And that's another thing too. It's this endangered species format. Isn't it interesting in the wake of digital comics that DC puts out something as anachronistic as this, and it hits us all in like, wow. Cause I don't know how long the newspaper comic strip is going to last beyond this decade. I really don't, because the way newspapers are dropping like flies, although it is the popular go-to feature still. I mean, when people are surveyed, that is something that they all love. I think that audience is dying.
Man, I got to get my family circus.
Hey, man. Jeffy.
He gets into so much shit.
What did Stewie say about Jeffy on Family Guy? What do you think of that, Jeffy?
Well, and another local, Mike Norton would actually probably be translate really well
Mike
to this.
Mike would be great on this. Absolutely.
He'd be awesome.
Yeah. No, I agree with
Stuart
that.
Doing a Blue Beetle. M-O-N.
Emo yeah, like see, yeah, yeah. See
you can't Mike Norton doing a Ted Kord Blue Beetle story.
I can see Scotty doing something at least art style wise like Shu, but I think a lot better than Shu.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great to see a Slam Bradley kind of Dick Tracy kind of thing?
Yeah.
Actually, Darwin Cook would be wonderful doing Slam.
Yeah, Darwin Cook doing Slam Bradley.
So
yeah,
maybe they can coax him to do something.
I'm just giving off like 10,000 awesome ideas.
Yeah. There you go.
Chiarello, do it, start writing down stuff.
Running out of green, glass pocket full of money, going down, 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 wagons full of honey, and she's gonna get some. Everybody knows the corners for the brave one. Every night she leaves with someone, dirty man playing with his kickstand. Yeah, we can see
Justice Society of America, number 29. This is the first issue of the Willingham Sturgis, and let's certainly not forget Mr. Jesus Moreno.
Oh, the art's awesome.
The art is awesome.
It is gorgeous. Yeah.
So end of an era. Jeff Johns was able to wrap up his epic run on JSA. He was on
you don't get runs like that anymore.
Yeah, because you have to go back to when he really came on full time in the 20s of the old JSA book before this book. So yeah, I would say so.
You know, he's been doing JSA for a long time. So a new start, and I think that Bill Willingham and Matt Sturgis put a nice new stamp without throwing the baby out with the bathwater. In this one, you kind of jump right in. It's the team that we were left with at the end of the Johns run. It's a new story and it's kind of a different voice for the book, but it jumps right into a mystery and
it does. I it does have a very different voice that might be a little tougher to get used to. I will give them credit though for amping up the speed of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
In
I agree
the story.
With that.
Like they
a lot that happened
fucking
in this first one.
Jam this issue. Like you, why is Stargirl not targeted? Why did Obsidian and Egg? Like I love the Johns
why
run.
The one
I think real big criticism that I would maybe have for the Johns run is that it gets slow in parts. There's parts where it's kind of like a little. There's a couple issues where you're like, let's pick up the pace just a little bit, you know. Like
I get it. Gog is not a good
guy. Yeah, I mean that was.
and as much as I loved the Kingdom Come Superman being part of the JSA, that whole arc was. Like,
I really
let's
appreciated
go.
The fact that they amped up like they jammed a lot in here. And
it is kind of like
introduce
you know,
new characters. Yeah. Like let's start. Yeah,
it's like they're driving a car and you hop in the back seat and they're like,
let's
it.
Go. Yeah.
What do you think of King Chimera?
Was my favorite part of the issue was him and All American Kid's interaction.
Yep.
Like I want to see it reminds me exactly of Zatara in the Superman issue this week where I'm just like, I kind of want to see these guys. Like I think it's really interesting new characters that I want to see more of. It kind of excites me for the JSA All-Stars book because I'm kind of like I want to see All-American Kid. Well, I don't know what's going to happen to him after the end of this issue, but
interesting.
I want to see him who's like this goody two-shoes with King Chimera, who is like sarcastic and just is like, just leave me alone. I don't want a roommate. This isn't summer camp. Sort of. I mean, like you're very basic, like teenage interaction between them. But I that was my favorite part of the issue, was actually like the kids interacting with each other.
And I heard you say it, Chris, on 11 o'clock comics recently, that the JSA in a lot of ways is becoming the DC X-Men.
It's DC's version of the X-Men.
And it's fun because I know way back when I always felt the Legion was like DC's X-Men, and from that standpoint, because of the amount of characters. But certainly,
well, it's kind of like how the X-Men is now, you know, where you have, you know, you have the veteran team of X-Men, the originals, and then, you know, with Wolverine, Colossus, kind of the old guard. But mm-hmm. then, you know, the whole X-Men universe has been about, you know, the new discovered mutants and bringing them into the school.
It's a school.
It's a school.
Well, it's
JSA,
a society.
Yeah,
it's,
and JSA is a school.
Sure.
For these, you know, for teaching the younger generation how to be heroes.
My only not complaint, well, I guess it is a slight complaint, is I want more participation from the old guard. And sometimes I feel like they are there in an advisory capacity and aren't really in the meat of the crisis at hand.
I think that might be helped with splitting.
I agree with you, and I am glad that that's happening. I totally agree with you.
I think that might be a good side. I think it might be a good benefit, because I think the tension is in the fact that if you introduce a new character, I think you kind of have to give them time.
Absolutely.
Like you can't just introduce a character and like
push him to the side.
And like, here's Jay Garrick a ton. Because I think it's hard to do that. And I think that was sort of the weakness, another sort of weakness of introducing all these characters, was like, and John's did an absolutely great job of balancing all of the new characters with the old characters. But I think at some point, if you want the new characters to sort of thrive, you really gotta give them actual backgrounds.
And also, like, they have a better chance of surviving and getting more interest from the public if you put them next to established characters and let them work together, rather than, hey, here's a new series of a new guy. You'll love him. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't kind of like him on his own. Well, Batman's coming in issue 3. Well, that's great.
It reminds me, it has potential to be like the New Mutants.
Yes.
That's what I was saying.
Oh,
it
no,
has the potential to be like all the good parts of the New Mutants.
Yeah.
When it was awesome in the 80s, because you had all these kids and you would still see them interact with the X-Men.
Sure.
But it would be fun, you know. It wouldn't be like a horrible situation all the time. Of course, horrible situations came up, but it was such a unique viewpoint on like super heroics compared to the big league guys. So I think there's a cool opportunity now. If do they do it as well as, you know, the New Mutants did, so who knows? I mean, it hasn't come out yet, but I think there's a really cool opportunity to tell stories like that, and they've done a really good job of building up to it.
And isn't it interesting, too, that much as there are old heroes and new heroes, you have a young writer in Matt Sturges, and you have a veteran like Bill Willingham working together, and they've been doing such a successful job in the Fables world. Mm-hmm. It's good to see that they're stepping in the mainstream, and this is a good, important first chapter.
I'm excited to see. I'm really excited for Sturges' JSA All-Stars, because I've gone back and read his Blue Beetle stuff, mm-hmm. which I hadn't read.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, that's really
good.
Oh, yeah. No,
yeah.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And not these two books, or what will eventually become two books with JSA All-Stars. The only book that's spinning on a JSA that I'm still like, I don't know.
Magog.
Yes. And man, you know, they're putting great people on it. Howard Porter and Keith Giffen, that's pretty goddamn good.
Mm-hmm.
And shit, that art looks fantastic.
Yep.
Holy shit, that art looks fantastic. But I just can't figure out this guy. I still have Kingdom Come on my mind when it comes to – I still have Come on my mind.
Oh, God.
I know. Yeah, I was going to say, get the squeegee. But no, I really do.
What
when it
the
come,
fuck?
When it comes to makeup, I know. Yeah, no one wants to sit next to me
the
anymore.
Lysol.
Gee, where's everyone going? All right, welcome back to Word Balloon. No, I
got Come in my mind.
But I do. I have Kingdom Come on my mind when it comes to Magog. I can't. And
he's gonna be a bad guy.
Well, that's what I mean. And even his and I thought it was interesting that Brave and Bold that they did with him and Booster Gold. But I'm still just like, I don't know if this.
Maybe
guy
that's
is,
the tension in the story is that, you know, he's, you're afraid he's gonna become the bad guy whole time.
I guess, but I just don't. I think he's still too new of a character to throw him out in his own book like that. I'm not optimistic. I guess I am open to reading the first issue and finding out. But for me,
you're supposed to hate this guy.
Yeah, but that's, and also I hate to be that fanboy that dismisses something before it comes out.
Yep.
I want to, and again, I like both of these creators, But I just don't get it. I don't get it. I think it's too soon, but that's just me.
Let me just quickly say, Remender's Punisher.
Kyle's got a book that
Remender's Punisher. Oh, okay. Remender's Punisher is completely awesome, and you should be reading it because it is dope.
And I'll just briefly say, too, that Kyle was holding up the Fantastic Four, Miller and Hitch's wrap-up. Man, I'm hearing nothing but a lot of shit about that book.
Miller and Immonen.
Thank you. Oh, that's true. Well, that's true.
Hitch isn't on it anymore.
That's a good point. I will fine. And with Stuart finishing the story and stuff, I don't understand where the hate came from on this story. I think this is a collection of great little stories. It wrapped up really nicely.
Boo!
And you know, Kyle jump in and continue. But honestly, all right. I think that I really like what Miller did with this, and I think that these arcs will be collected and remembered as a very good time on the Fantastic Four.
Oh, definitely. I think this, especially this run, went pretty close to the old cosmic size stories that you got from Fantastic Four, where you thought, wow, this is something that's really important. This is something that could destroy everything, and the Fantastic Four fixed it.
And also, I think some very human stories as well. And I mean, a very touching wrap up to the Things arc in this final story. Man, I'm telling you, I liked everything about it. I liked their Christmas interlude in Scotland. I liked Doom's participation, the jump to the future.
Yeah.
And honestly, everything about this I thought was a very fun run. I like the art, and I like the action that happened, and I like the characterization. There was nothing wrong with this series other than the fact that it kind of fell off schedule.
Yeah, fuck
and,
you.
And boo fucking who.
What's up, haters?
And boo fucking who, because when it's collected 3 years from now, no one's going to remember,
no one's assholes. Care. You won't care.
The crazy thing is this week, Stuart Immonen had 3 books come out. That's a crazy thing for a pencil.
New Avengers, Spider-Man.
New Avengers, the
Ultimate
the Ultimate annual? Spider-Man, yeah, Ultimatum or whatever it's called, and this. Yeah, it's nuts.
All right.
Well,
email.
And if you would like to email the show, you can certainly do so by emailing us at info@aroundcomics.com.
Let's jam it in. Let's jam this shit in, man.
All right. This is from an old friend of the show. Hey guys, this is Brian Defferding from Deftune Comics. He does
Appleton's very
school.
Own.
Yep, he Brian does a school ghost story. And I have a question for your show.
Yeah,
The Walking Dead has been dominating the horror comic scene for a long time
Comics.
I wanted to know what your thoughts were on horror comics. Has there been any horror comics that scared you? Any of them you enjoy? What are your favorites, both past and present? Whose art do you think works well in horror comics as well? Thank you for your time.
I never actually get scared by horror comics. I don't get scared by horror movies either. Yeah. Like I enjoy them.
Do you get creeped out by horror comics?
No, I just
really
like it. Just doesn't. It's not that I don't enjoy them, because I do enjoy them, and I look at them. I'm like, oh, that's cool. But like, I can't say that I get that visceral feeling of like. Mm-hmm. Really being creeped out by it. Like, I recognize.
You said there was an old creepy. Swamp Thing issue that kind of freaked you out.
Say it.
There is the one with the little white monkey thing. That one fucking scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. But like, as an adult, like, I can't watch. Like, I read that for the first time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And that it was easier to scare me. Like, now when I read something, like, I just don't get.
Most of the time it's like, ooh, that looks cool.
I don't get. frightened, but I can appreciate a frightening story. Yeah. Like,
would you guys call Chew a horror? Is there horror in Chew? I mean, it's cannibalistic and stuff. Because I want to say that, you know, and the only reason why I ask is, it seems like today's horror is as tied to the gross factor as it is boo or you know, the surprise.
I wouldn't
say
Chew is horror because
and there's another one that I don't know if it counts as horror. Chew and the Exterminators creep me out to the point
Exterminators,
where
I would
truly
say is more horror, because I think Chew's angle's a bit more surreal detective.
I agree with that, but I can think of other horror stories that have that kind of element to them as well.
I guess visually, so I don't find it frightening.
It's
like
icky.
From the art
no,
style.
But it's not, and that's why I said creeped out, because it isn't frightening. It's gross, icky. Yeah. It's icky, and I mean that as a compliment. But it does. It creeps me out. Chew creeps me out.
Why are you such a pussy?
Because I am. Honestly, hey man, I'll cop to it. You're right, man.
I have not read it yet. Sal has been raving about Crossed.
I still haven't read it yet either, and I would say that about a lot of Avatar books have a lot of horrific images in them. that are very interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Mark Beatty here is saying the cross.
No hero is not one to shy away from horrific images.
I know it's very old school horror, but did anybody read Creepy?
I'm glad week? You brought it up because
I did. That was really good.
It was awesome.
I haven't picked it up yet, so I'm kind of wondering.
It didn't frighten me, but I man, I'll tell you, the gray wash looks amazing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Creepy was really good. I was going to say, I'd love reading like the House of Mystery showcases. Mm-hmm. And none of the stories scare me because, I mean, like they're written for scare. Like
you're a 30-year-old man.
But they're still cool. You can still recognize the craft in making like a scary, creepy story without having the same visceral, which is different from comedy or drama. Like someone tells you a bad joke, you don't go, that was a well-written joke.
If you had slipped,
didn't laugh.
You know, and again, obviously with the exception of the Alex Toth story that was in this new creepy number one, which obviously is an old story. If you put any of those new stories in those classic creepy hardcovers that Dark Horse is putting out, you couldn't tell me that they wouldn't have fit as well. I mean, I think all the artists did an amazing job, and I think the writers did an amazing job.
I think this is a wonderful thing, writing-wise, my only criticism would be maybe just like a half notch tighter, just a little tighter story wise. I thought it was, some of them were like just a little loose, like you got to the cliffhanger and you're kind of like, you know, like let's amp it up just like a little bit. Still very good. Yeah. And I think it'll improve. As I was telling you earlier, a lot of people don't have experience doing that type of stuff anymore.
Well, that's
I think
what I
it
was
takes
say,
a little
yes.
while. For people to get into the groove of doing that. And I think.
And telling a story in 10 pages or less.
And telling a story like that. So they did a very good job, like doing it, but I think it'll only get better as people see more examples and they're able. Everyone gets more experience, the editors and everyone gets more experience doing it. Because it just felt like just a little, like, you know, like.
Just stop short.
Well,
just
that's.
A tad bit. Not bad, but just like it could have been just a little bit.
I think
tighter
it's,
ending.
I think it's the difference in the way people are taught now because I think the writers back in the day, back in the Silver Age and in the Bronze Age, were given those anthology books and had to write 8-page or 6-page or 10-page stories. Yeah. And now it is kind of in reverse where it's like, no, we need it smaller. And I've asked guys like Mark Waid that is, you know, certainly instructed a lot of young writers and stuff and asked him about that. And he says it's a very specific skill of story writing. And trying to write an 8-page comic is very, very difficult. And no, I agree with you. I think these guys will only get better as they do it. But I also think that you got a great old hand in Angelo Torres who did an amazing job. Hillary's 2-page fierce. What is it? Losam Lore.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I don't remember the name.
Yeah, I don't remember the name.
That was awesome. Yeah.
It was great, and it really had that great combination too of EC humor and horror.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah.
For Warren. So
I love that because it had like it had that short, compact sort of like let's jam as much as we can in, like let's like really fit as much, you know, let's give you as much of your dollar as you can. Yeah, it was great.
No, and I, you know, yeah, I can't, I'm so glad you brought it up because I've been waiting. I mean, I interviewed it.
Creepy.
I interviewed it's delightful. But no,
creepy.
I think I give Dark Horse a lot of credit for reviving the series and having a good first step forward. I think it's excellent. And if you at all love the old stuff, buy the new one because you will not be disappointed.
Cool. I will do that. I hadn't picked that up. Lock and Key is one of my favorite books, period. And it's great in the Stephen King tradition. His son, Joe Hill.
When are they going to do a Cujo comic?
There you go.
Dismissive.
No,
Dead
no.
Man as a kid always creeped me out, and I thought that was, and especially Neil Adams was really amazing in that.
If you want to talk about horror in comics, Japanese manga probably does biological horror better than anyone.
This is what I understand from a friend of the show.
Oh, you mean like? I mean, we're all scared of tentacle rape. Is that horror, or is that just...
Are you really scared?
Isn't that just like self-preservation? Just like, I prefer not to be tentacle raped.
Whenever I don't know that's coming, that always cracks me up. It's like, oh, okay. Hey, here come the tentacles.
Here comes the tentacles.
Whoa, is that what that is? Hello, Senator. I thought that was your finger.
I was raped by tentacles.
And loved it.
It's on the veranda.
There's we've talked about it on 11 o'clock. There's a book called Gyo, which is spelled G-Y-O, and another one called Parasite, which are pretty good manga horror if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Is there any tentacle ramp?
No.
That's manga even, horror. That's your manga horror story that I was asking. Even, I'm confused.
Is there even a hint?
Maybe, yes.
If it don't have tentacles, we're not interested. If there's not a tentacle coming up a crevice, we're not there.
I want to read.
You want your
that is what I'm into.
What about Vincent Price's wonderful collection of anthology tales that we've been enjoying from Blue Water? No, honestly, and I'm not being mean because
yes, you are.
He's a man. No, I'm just doing my Vincent Price, which I always.
He's dead.
It's okay.
Well, what's are you going to get pissed?
That's a press from St. Louis, by the way.
Can you download this show in heaven, hell, or purgatory?
I would like to suggest the St. Louis-style pizza with our fine vermicelli cheese. What's it called? What kind of cheese?
Provel.
Provel, yes.
It's horrifying.
Yeah, it is.
It's scary. Honestly, that title fascinates me, and I don't mean that in a mean way.
It's got a scary ape on the cover.
It's the first Vincent Price-less cover. I'm like, where the hell's Vincent?
He's not on it, but there's
the ape. I had the ape over for dinner and made him a lovely bouillabaisse.
You know, Rick Remender and Seth Peck did a pretty good kind of like 70s slasher horror book.
Oh, yeah, I remember
called,
that. Triple X.
Sorrow.
Oh, Sorrow. And what about Triple X Zombies?
Triple X Zombies was just funny ass over the top.
Sorrow was great, though. Franco
Francavilla.
I'm surprised.
Francesco Francavilla, yes.
I'm surprised in Triple X Zombies they didn't fit tentacle rape somewhere in there.
If there was a volume two, you know, it was. Yeah. They had a nun doing things.
Doing things. And a nun is doing things over there.
I know Chris read it, but The Roberts, I mean, that was a year ago. That was a good horror story. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and that's more on the psychological side. So anyway, Brian, thank you very much. Horror comics.
That was a delightful discussion of ghouls and goblins.
Let me see here.
Can't help it. I like Vincent Price.
Oh, okay. This is a real easy one. This is from Ben.
It
says, hey, Chris, just like to thank you for your show, which I was directed to by your arch nemesis, iFanboy. I've been looking for all ages comics for my brother and was wondering if you could direct me to your thread I have been unable to find.
iFanboy didn't want to answer this. Yeah. So that's why they sent it to us. So we're.
If you don't, we used to have a thread on the forum about age appropriate comics for kids. Well, we don't have the forum anymore. We have the Around Comics community now. So we don't have that thread. But if you would like to create one there, you can go to aroundcomics.com and create a group
because he doesn't know any.
I'll be curious what Kyle reached for, but I've got some suggestions, unless you're ready, Kyle.
Hey, kids shouldn't even read comics. They're all fucked up.
No, you should go out and play with your friends.
Yeah, go outside, dude. Play some baseball or something. Listen.
Something I've noticed recently was the Incredibles, which is one of my favorite Pixar movies, and
way to go, Boom, by the way.
The comic looks awesome.
It is, and I would extend that to a lot of Boom's kid product, including The Muppet Show.
Cars.
Which is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Haven't read Cars, I got to be honest, although I did see the free comic book day when it looked fine. I have a feeling, though, based on The Incredibles and what I've seen from the Muppet stuff that they've done, Boom is an excellent choice. We talked about it last week, congratulating Art Balthazar and Franco for Tiny Titans. I think that's a fine product. The Marvel Adventure books are great. And I think, especially for kids.
Mark Waid is writing The Incredibles.
There you go. No, that. Honestly, man. No, there's.
That's awesome.
No, they Boom took a lot of these Disney licenses and, you know, no. Look, and especially Mark is a perfect example of a guy who grew up in the era of shitty licensed comics. I did, too. It was like, hey, Charlton's doing the Flintstones. Fantastic. And then you read it. Oh. Never mind. And no offense to some really good people that wrote that book. It's just that it was always inconsistent. You couldn't count on it.
Hey, man,
and
Simpsons comics have been good for
the Bongo books are fantastic. And it's real Bongo people that worked on the shows doing the books, too. Bill Morrison was the art director on Futurama and is running fucking Bongo. And again, friends of the program, Andrew Peepoy, a wonderful Bongo creator. Hilary Bardo, a wonderful Bongo creator.
Eric Powell.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle Baker.
No, it's, you know.
I mean, the talent that works on Simpsons is amazing.
No, I completely agree. And so, yeah, there's a bunch of good books. I really like what the Johnny DC line
Jill Thompson has done. Do some Bongo stuff?
That I'm not sure of. But Hearst, by the way, Scary Godmother, you can't go wrong with that for fun stuff for kids. No, there's a lot of good product. Yeah. You know, and again, hey, and I'm looking right now over your shoulder and I see Archie, and I honestly, Archie's still good, man. Yep. Archie, I mean, really. And I mean, it'll be funny to see what they do with, the Betty Veronica triangle that's coming, and now our, you know, the marriage. I think that's going to be kind of fun. But
there's a wealth of kids comics out there. Go into your local comic shop. Talk to if you have a comic shop. If your owner or manager is worth their salt, they will be able to direct you to some really good age appropriate comics.
And I also hope that Johnny DC eventually goes back to the Superman adventures and really puts in a much bigger, as opposed to the digest size collections of Mark Miller's Superman mm-hmm. stuff. Because those are just flat-out great Superman stories that happen to be under the Johnny DC banner. But they work. I mean, they're good. They're just really, really good Superman stories.
Cool. All right, so there's some emails. If you would like to call the show, we had some voicemails last week. We will catch up with those more next time. But if you want to drop us a line, you can do so by calling 1-888-977-5903. And a couple announcements before we wrap up here. As always, we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative.
Good people.
Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809.
Can I give an addendum to that? This weekend at Chicago Comic Con, too late, I'm already doing it.
I was going to say, you don't like Hero Initiative?
No, I do, and I like something they did at the Chicago Comic Con, and I think still needs your support.
Speed dating?
John Ostrander
is
having a mm-hmm. tough time with... a degenerative, and I forget what
is glaucoma.
It is glaucoma. Thank you, Kyle. And they did an auction where a lot of the comics community has put up some great items for auction. Mm-hmm. The need to continue to help John out continues because he has insurance. It doesn't cover everything, and he's going through very expensive eye treatments, and also the cost of having to go to Boston to get the stuff done and staying in Boston. So he really could use your help. The Hero Initiative has been very supportive of this. There's a website called Comics, C-O-M-I-X, four site.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go there. Keep looking at the information. Do what you can. And really, even if you can just like say once, you know, do a $3 book. You know, that's how I've been framing it on Word Balloon. And look at it that way. Buy one extra book for John. He's a great creator. He's written wonderful stories, creating the Suicide Squad.
You can go to aroundcomics.com and you can hit the donate button and donate through PayPal right to Hero Initiative right
there.
Direct, you can donate directly to what John Ostrander is going through for the comicsforsight.com.
Yep.
You know, but I think that brings up a great point. I don't want to sound like a pledge drive, but we become aware of this as certain creators fall on hard times, whether it's health or economics or whatever. It's never a bad time to give, but don't wait for that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Because Hero is there as a first strike to get people back on their feet. Hero is a fantastic charity. So the next comic book convention you go to, make that the first stop whenever you go to
And the great thing is, and it'll happen at Windy City, and I know it happened at the Chicago mm-hmm. Comic Con as well, it's a great opportunity for you to buy original sketches. I mean, they always have top flight talent at the Hero Initiative booths, mm-hmm. and it's a bargain. And also the good thing is they're doing it for charity. The money is going to go to the creators who need it, and you're going to get something great from them as well. So no, the Hero Initiative is a great organization.
You got it. And speaking of Windy City Comic Con, remember to book your plans now to attend the 2009 Windy City Comic Con, taking place Saturday, September 19th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're adding over 30 new creators. We just announced Nate Powell, the Eisner Award-winning creator of Swallow Me Whole, which Nate is an Indiana native, and so he's coming on up. But coming all the way from Los Angeles is our new special guest, Mr. Richard Starkings. You heard about that last week.
The man from Comicraft, Elephant Man.
You got it. I know that Chris Burnham will be excited to spend time with Uncle Rich, as he calls him. So a great list of guests. Kyle Bice is going to be there.
He's like comics Dr. Doolittle. That's how I feel about Richard. So every time I see him, I always think of Dr. I'm hanging out with Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, he's awesome. Richard's
very
awesome.
Funny dude.
So 80 guests this year. Great retailers, including Cadence Comic Art, which is a sponsor of the show, so you'll be able to buy original art. Ton of Cadence creators are going to be there, so you can get it signed right on site. Silver Age back issues, high grade back issues, cheap bargain back issues, statues, toys, games, all that good stuff. So find out everything at www.windycitycomiccon.com. So thank you for that. Our other family of podcasts, Word Balloon, of course.
How you doing, everybody?
Tom versus the Flash.
Hello.
I'm sure as this program is being aired, I'm giving you a fallout of a lot of floor interviews, both audio and video from Comic-Con.
Nice. Your word tubes.
Yes, sir. And also, man, August is going to be great because I still got more Bendis tapes coming up. And
word balloon tubers.
If you will. And I got promised discussions coming from, if they're not already out, Kirkman, Paul Jenkins.
Mm-hmm. One tuber makes you smaller.
Exactly, man. Swamp Thing tuber.
What happens if you eat John's tubers?
You go inside John's mind.
No, you live in the year 1962 and enjoy the black and white reruns that he enjoys. Oh, look,
welcome to the word.
Where are you? Fantastic.
Enjoy the word balloon tubers.
Yes, by all means, Vincent Price will make a lovely stew out of said tubers. Yikes.
And you can listen to me every week. I cannot talk now.
That's
you
right. Don't fuck it up.
You can listen to me every show on 11 o'clock comics.
That is right, with David Price and Jason Wood. And that's just the three of you, yes.
Yes.
Vince B.
Vince. All right. I'd like to thank everyone for dropping by tonight. Mr. Kyle Bice, Mr. Tom Caters, Mr. John Suntrist.
Thank you.
And Mark Beatty, as always, for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. We'll be back again next week with another full-length episode. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Comics fiction.
That's right.
I checked out 20 minutes ago, buddy.
Tom is done.
Really on the mic.
So do we scratch your comics itch?
Send in.
Yeah, he's bored with us already.
Yeah. Like, I'm done with you people.
Find a rolling stone that rolls alone. Can you find a bus that won't stop running? Can you get a good carburetor in the front of the candy store? I keep looking. I travel late, I travel low. Because I got
views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2009.